The Buffalo Bills narrowly avoid a huge upset, but other NFC contenders aren't so lucky. What happens to the San Francisco 49ers if they don't have CMC or Debo for a few weeks? Are the Bengals fixed, or is the Seahawks offense just not as good as we thought it was? All that and more on the Week 6 Sunday recap. Let's get into it. It's Monday, October 16th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. A really exciting Sunday this week to recap with the one and only Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Well, we survived. We got through it, right? It's a day of injuries, a day of upsets, a day of totals going under. So if you wanted a lot of fantasy points, you've wanted a lot of fantasy headlines. I guess we have headlines, but they're kind of negative headlines. But the games were exciting, and the Sunday night game, which we're going to start with, went down to the final untimed down. So it's when two teams play and one team is favored by 15 points and you get a competitive game out of it, I guess you can't really complain.
Yeah, can't complain too much about that. Obviously, a lot of injuries to be concerned about, as you mentioned, which means that there will probably be a lot of panic coming out of Sunday, and you know what to do. In that scenario, you hit up Andy Behrens and I for the People's Panic Meter episode that comes out on Tuesday. Scott and I, we are literally shooting from the hip here, reacting off the cuff here on Sunday night. You know, right up to midnight, man. We're doing this show, okay? So this is in the moment type stuff. Andy and I, hopefully, a little more, you know, we've come down, a little more zen, stuff like that on Monday coming out of this. So if you are panicked about something, Andy and I can help you there. The People's Panic Meter, fantasy mailbag, yahoosports.com. That's where you send in the things that have you the most panicked coming out of week 6. But, Scott, let's waste no more time. Let's get right into these reactions here, starting with the Sunday Night Football game that I think certainly outkicked all of our expectations. You know, Scott, I write a recap column, and I know you write a recap column on Sunday as well. Usually I lead mine with the Sunday night game, the Care Don't Care recap. This week, our fearless leader, Jason Kobaka, hit me up and was like, hey, let's go ahead and like skip the Sunday night game for the topper of your recap. Like, you know, this looks like it's going to be a dog of a game. If there's other topics you want to lead with, go for it, which almost just guarantees that the game is going to be way more exciting when your editors start to be like, let's just go ahead and skip this one. It was much more exciting. Bills 14, Giants 9. The Bills started extremely slow. The Giants had their number, but they being the Buffalo Bills, hang on in the end and are able to stave off a Giants win literally at the last down, like you said, which was untimed thanks to penalty.
It may sound weird having optimism for the Giants offense on a day where they score 9 points, but Saquon Barkley back in action, and he gets 28 touches in this game, gets 98 total yards, no touchdown, but it's just good to see him back on the field. He hasn't really looked explosive to me all year, but we are starving for playable running backs in fantasy, and Barkley is just going to get all the volume he can handle when he's in uniform, so that's a good thing. And look, everybody knows that Daniel Jones is a starter with the Giants, and Tyrod Taylor is a very good backup, but he's a backup. But isn't it kind of funny that Taylor turned this offense into an offense that could support a couple of guys? I mean, Darren Waller, you know, 5 for 43 on 7 targets. They're not going to throw a parade for that, but tight end, another position that's extremely lean for fantasy. Waller managers are probably a little bit disappointed with that line, but maybe not terribly so. He came very close to scoring a game-winning touchdown at the end of this game. And you know me, I'm kind of a Darius Slayton sympathizer. I'm always looking for signs that Wandell Robinson right. Could do something. He caught all of his 8 targets, but they didn't go anywhere. Jalen Hyatt get a little bit involved. Again, I'm not throwing a parade. I'm not releasing balloons. I'm not baking a cake for a team that just scored 9 points. But given how hopeless the Giants offense had looked in recent weeks, it didn't feel like a hopeless offense to me. They left it. What they did is leave a ton of points on the table, and that's why they didn't win the game. But I just wanted to see this arrow ever so slightly start to point up, and I think it did a little bit tonight.
Okay, so I'm with you. This was the most fun I've had watching the Giants all year. By the way, that's a low bar, right? That is about as low as it gets. And we've got a lot of Giants on a lot of primetime so far this year. And you and I have been trying to unsubscribe from the Giants like we were trying to unsubscribe from the 2022 Denver Broncos. But, yo, as a as a drafter of a lot of Daniel Jones teams this year, and like I've quickly moved on from Jones at this point, right? Like I'm not here, oh, maybe he'll turn around for Daniel Jones. No, he was like a 10th round pick. You cut and move on and you find a streamer. That's over. That's done with. So as a guy that drafted a lot of Daniel Jones, primarily because I thought this offense could take a leap with some of the new players mixed in, like we saw Darren Waller mixed in, you know, Wandale Robinson is finally looking healthy as like a reliable check down option. You know, Jalin Hyatt making some tough as nails catches. So I draft Daniel Jones because of that reason, because he can offer something with his legs. How do I square the fact that I finally feel like I got something close to that version of the player, but it was actually a guy that I've been in the corner of for a long time? Like I go back with my dude Tyrod. Like I've had a lot of Tyrod exposure over the years, you know, Virginia Tech's finest, another Virginia guy, you know, so how do I square the fact that Tyrod seems to have finally gotten some life out of this offense? What does that say about Daniel Jones? I don't know that we need to have like a Daniel Jones referendum right now, but I mean, it is at least making me raise my eyebrows.
I wish I had a great answer to that. It is a great question. And honestly, I think you did the right thing moving on from Daniel Jones. If you are going to be stubborn and just insist that all the picks you made and all the opinions you held a month ago, 2 months ago are going to be correct in the evidence of things to the contrary, then you're just a bad fantasy player. And if Daniel Jones comes back and gets it going again and starts playing like 2022, Daniel Jones, so be it. But that's exactly the type of player you should move on from. And I think you did the right thing. And who knows? I mean, if Daniel Jones plays well when he comes back, you know, maybe you'll end up with a couple more Daniel Jones shares. We'll see. But it's all about trust. And there's no reason why Daniel Jones played poorly enough that he should have been dropped in most reasonable formats. And you have to be able to divorce yourself from the opinions you had in the summer.
100%. Yeah. And Taylor's a good backup. I thought there was a time when they signed Tyrod Taylor back before 2022. I was like, he might start games for this team. And obviously Daniel Jones ended up having a really solid run there in 22. So we'll see what happens when Jones does get back on the field. It's like you said, he's the starter. They committed to him long-term. On the Bills side of this, man, you know, it was definitely some chaos Josh Allen moments. I will give guys like Bobby Okereke on the Giants side flying around. Wink Martindale, the Giants defensive coordinator, who's come under some fire this year, did a great job of changing the picture after the snap for Josh Allen, where, you know, this is a team that blitzes a ton. They put a ton of dudes up on the line and then they drop those guys back into coverage. I think that rattled Josh Allen throughout the game. But Scott, you know me, a longtime Diggs guy. It's just so wonderful that these two have each other, right? Like, we should be so lucky that an elite A-tier route runner like Steph Diggs found his way to Josh Allen right when Steph Diggs needed Josh Allen, Josh Allen needed Stephon Diggs. And, you know, when things just weren't going right on offense, well, they just dial it back to the Steph Diggs show. 16 targets on 30 Josh Allen throws. For the math people out there, that's over 50%. You know, we've said a lot on the show, Scott. We wish there was more to the offense sometimes than just Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. But, man, when they need it, that connection is as good as any in the league.
Stephon Diggs, to me, is a perfect fantasy player because you just look at his game logs. He's been over 100 yards in 5 of the 6. His quote-unquote bad game this season was a 7.66 game, which if you have any kind of a PPR component, is still going to be a score that will help you. It's just a little bit under what you'd expect from him. But in a league where there's so much variance, there's so much boom and bust, and wide receiver as the position defined by boom and bust, Stephon Diggs has double-digit targets just about every week. He has a ton of touchdown equity. No touchdown tonight, but I just love the players who are this consistent while maintaining a ceiling. In any given week, Stephon Diggs can be the cover boy. He can be the guy we write about. He can be at the top of the scoreboard. But even in his games like this where the Buffalo only scores 14 points, Diggs still gets you in a full PPR. You're looking at 20 points and a half PPR. You're looking at 15 points. That's his quote-unquote off game. And the usage is off the charts. Obviously, as you talk about the mind meld with Josh Allen, I know we redrafted recently, but I think Stephon Diggs could be a top five pick in a redraft because he's the way he scores for you, that combination of floor and ceiling, there's so few players like that. And receivers tend to be less injury prone than some of the other positions who take on more hits. I'm just so glad I have Stephon Diggs investments this year. It probably means I'm spending too much time with you.
Yeah, it definitely means you are spending too much time with me. But hey, at least that part of it, the getting Stephon Diggs part on your team, at least that part's been good. I don't know about the rest of it, Scott, but at least that part of spending time with me has been beneficial to you. I agree. Top five pick for sure. It feels like people always try to talk them out of Stephon Diggs, talk themselves out of Stephon Diggs as a first round pick, like going into each of the last two or three years, just because he's just easily going to moonwalk his way to like 1400 yards and eight touchdowns. And then everything else beyond there is a ceiling present. But yeah, I mean, what a great player. We do have to mention before we transition out of this game, on a day like just full chock full of injuries, Damian Harris, really scary injury in this game. He takes his one carry for 1 yard and ends up leaving in an ambulance to go to the hospital, was stretchered off. So waiting for news on that, hoping for the best for Damian Harris, obviously James Cook and Latavius Murray, the other guys in that backfield. So hope for an update on that one. But anything else you want to hit on in this game before we keep it moving?
What's your level of confidence on Cook going forward?
I mean, you know, three-man backfields are always tough. Two-man backfields are another animal. I think my level of confidence with James Cook depends on how you view him. Like if you view him somewhere between running back 18 and 20, I think my confidence level that he can be that is pretty high. I think if you're hoping for anything more than that, like a high end two, certainly a low end one, I think that dream is kind of dead at this point.
I like that. Yeah. I think he's a playable, if somewhat boring, running back two. And as you mentioned, you know, Godspeed to Damian Harris. You never want to see anybody get hurt like that.
All right. The Bills avoided a massive upset, but that was not the case for a ton of the best teams in the NFL this year. Let's move on to the rest of the games from week 6. All right. Moving into the headliners now, we got a couple of upsets to talk about in the NFC. Let's start it with Browns 19, 49ers 17, Scott. The 49ers come out of this one banged up. CMC's got an oblique injury that he left. He tried to come back. He then left again. Debo Samuel's got a shoulder injury. So the 49ers come out of this one with their first loss of the season. Purdy's first loss in the regular season of his entire NFL career. Very brief career it's been. But they come out of this one dinged up. And the Browns come out of this one kind of reminding us, despite the fact that they are very banged up, they're a tough, tough team to play against.
Yeah, I like to say that there really aren't that many defenses that you want to avoid. That some defenses are better than others. But when we're talking about the strength of your opposing defense for a fantasy matchup, you want to talk about the outliers, right? Who is really, really bad and who is really, really good? The Cleveland Browns defense. I'm convinced the NFL has signed a memo that they're allowed to play 13 or 14 guys on the field at every snap. They were all over the place, and they stole this game on a day where Cleveland was playing with a backup quarterback, and their offense was a lot of, you know, duck and hope. And it's really remarkable how similar the Jets upset of the Eagles was to the Niners upset of the Browns upset of the 49ers. Just, you know, two offenses hoping to survive and just make a play or two while the defense carried the day for 3 hours. And I don't want to come down too hard on Purdy, because I thought Trent Williams got hurt in this game. Debo got hurt. Christian McCaffrey got hurt. This was a survival day in the NFL, right? With all the injuries and just a lot of craziness and stuff. And so Purdy wasn't playing with the stuff that he usually has, and he get thrown to the wolves, and Cleveland made a late comeback. I don't even know what you take from this game. If you're a 49er backer, you just be happy that you don't play the Browns again, and you hope to get back to a full roster fairly soon.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't overreact to this one on the 49ers side. I'm with you. To put the chaos that Brock Purdy was facing, I mean, you could just watch it and see he was consistently thrown off his spot, and then he would throw some, you know, just kind of misfires to Brandon Ayuk downfield, where, you know, he'd either have to try to make a crazy adjustment to go get it. Ayuk ends up leading the team with 10 targets and 76 yards, as expected, when Debo's banged up. George Kittle, man, what a reminder of just like what it's like to roster George Kittle, that he has 3 touchdowns the week prior, and he literally comes all the way back to earth with a 1 catch, 1 yard performance against these Browns. Purdy threw 18.5% of his passes into tight windows, according to Next Gen Stats, in this game. To put that into context, he was at 12% going against the Cowboys last week. So again, just tipping on the other side of the difficulty scale. I'm with you that I think you just kind of wash your hands of this if you're the 49ers. And by the way, there were some, you know, kind of questionable late game penalties in this one for the 49ers too. So, you know, there's that you can take away from it as well. Really, we just need these guys to get healthy. I think if Christian McCaffrey, like, you know, knock on wood, had to ever miss any time, I think Jordan Mason has probably jumped ahead of Elijah Mitchell, who carried the ball two times for minus 3 yards in this game, whereas Jordan Mason scored a touchdown, had 5 carries on 27 yards.
I'm really curious to see what the route data winds up being for Kittle, because I wonder if they maybe put him into the trenches more often than not, because they're just trying to keep Purdy upright. And you know, at least Ayuk absorbed a lot of targets, didn't do a ton with it, but you know, Brandon Ayuk is a pretty reliable player. Tight end is not a consistent position, but if I rostered Kittle, the next time he has one of those blow-up games, I would love to trade him for more of a consistent drumbeat type of tight end. The problem is there just aren't that many guys like that.
Like, who is that?
Well, maybe it's Sam Laporta, right? Maybe I'd rather, and maybe people just value Laporta more than Kittle anyway. And obviously, Laporta wasn't 100% today. A couple of Iowa tight ends. So maybe this is an Andy Behrens question. Not that he could be, you know, fair and genuine about his own children, as, you know, Kittle and Laporta pretty much are.
Scott, he said on the pod last week that he's got a team where he last week flexed Kittle and then started Sam Laporta at tight end. So yeah, correct.
He does not have. Yeah, those are the Roy Marble all stars for sure. Yeah, I'd rather have a more consistent guy at tight end than Kittle, but you know, there aren't many guys like that, right? I mean, you know, you're not getting Travis Kelce in any kind of a Kittle trade. You're probably not getting Mark Andrews. I'm not even sure if you're getting Laporta anymore. On the flip side, hats off to Amari Cooper, right? I mean, playing with a quarterback who probably shouldn't be starting for anybody in P.J. Walker, and Cooper still gets over 100 yards and draws 8 targets. Elijah Moore doesn't do much with his 7 targets. The backfield for Cleveland was two fantasy viable days, right? I mean, Ford got 17 carries. Hunt got 12. Hunt got a touchdown. They were both involved in the passing game. Running back is so ugly these days, and there's so few bell cows that I'm asking myself before every week, who do I think is getting double-digit touches this week? Who do I think has some receiving equity? And you can say Ford and Hunt both check those boxes. That makes them playable. The whole excitement for Ford when he was a free agent, and, you know, do I blow all my budget on him and everything? I mean, he's not going to be that kind of player, but he's going to have a pretty high floor for touches every week. Hunt obviously has a role in this offense, and that's something. Especially as we navigate through all these injuries and through the bye weeks, if you can get me to double-digit touches on a Sunday, I think you're probably fantasy viable in most formats.
A couple things there. Want to follow up your point about Amari Cooper. According to Next Gen Stats, Amari Cooper on sideline targets this year ranks first in the NFL with 6 receptions, first with 158 receiving yards, 3 receptions over expected, and 90 yards over expected so far. All of those are first in the NFL. He's been great there, and that's something that, like, early in Amari Cooper's career, especially with the Raiders and frankly with the Cowboys too, where he was not really good, like, in contested situations, he's been awesome there with the Browns. I just can't say enough about how impressed I've been with him the last 2 years in Cleveland. He's been a really, really, really good player. And yeah, PJ Walker, man. I don't know how I was invested in this game, so I was watching it at the end and was just the only one that was left on TV. That was a very frustrating end for PJ Walker. Brutal, like, too wide open. Like, Elijah Moore might not have housed it, but he might have, like, ran for 40 yards. Just wide open throws that PJ Walker missed. He's under pressure, but I mean, he didn't even get close on some of those. He might have thrown the game sealing interception, but did stop the clock for San Francisco anyways. And lastly, just on the backfield too, Scott, Jerome Ford kind of took this game over a little bit late. Took it over is kind of in quotes, but if you looked at the box score before the last couple of drives, it looked pretty even for Ford and Hunt, and even Hunt looked like he was coming out a little better. He scored the touchdown, but Jerome Ford made some nice runs in that final drive and really ripped off some big plays. So I don't know. I kind of don't know what to take of that if I'm looking at the backfield. I do think both of them are, like, flex worthy. I don't know that either one's a locked in, set it and forget it RB2, but this team did show a lot of faith in Jerome Ford in the offseason. I'm wondering if, like, a big moment there in a big win could maybe get him to pushed a little bit ahead in the workload here.
Valid point. Just to put a period on the Cooper sentence, I've been trying to the last few seasons to draft fantasy teams that are a little bit younger at the key positions, because it's a young person's game, and running backs come out of the box ready to use for fantasy, and receivers don't need as much prep time as they used to be. And sometimes rookie receivers can be impactful right away, or at least in the second half of a fantasy season. And it's just interesting. You think of Cooper, you talk about how impressed you've been with some of the stuff he's done and that work on the sidelines and all the metrics that point to him. Older receiver, Adam Thielen, you know, a guy I drafted a couple of times just for ugly target share, but I think anything would happen to it. He's been an absolute steal this year. You know, the number one running back in fantasy right now is a 30-something player. We'll get to him in a little bit. I guess this was a good year to go old. I mean, it's 6 weeks. You know how the NFL is. I always say it's a snow globe league. These themes could be ripped up and thrown into the garbage can in a week or two. But it's just funny that being age-driven at the draft table doesn't feel like it was the right strategy so far through 6 weeks.
I like that you brought that up. And I think I'm actually going to have a point on that in our next game here, but not quite like a sort of twist on the ageism point here. So let's move into it. Next game up here, Jets 20, Eagles 14, another massive upset. You said that this one felt kind of similar. I would say it's almost even more impressive for the Jets because they were missing their top two cornerbacks, and Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed might be one of the best cornerback duos in the NFL. And they pull off this upset here primarily because Jalen Hurts throws three interceptions, one of which turned the game. The last one turned the game for the Jets. They ended up right in scoring position. Breece Hall rips a touchdown here. I mean, just a huge, huge win for the Jets on this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they said it on the broadcast. I have to figure the Eagles let Hall score. They wanted to get the ball back.
I thought they did say it, like, kind of alluded to that. And okay. Yeah, I think they did. You could see one of the dudes, like, literally playing, like, two-hand touch out there.
So the Jets, much like the Browns, a team, I don't know what's going on in the quarterback room. It's worse for the Jets because the Browns can at least imagine, dream of an upside of Deshaun Watson. There's really no upside with Zach Wilson, but at least he's doing what we really want Zach Wilson to do. Two things. One, don't utterly give the game away, right? I mean, no picks today. You know, he wasn't great, but he didn't lose the game. Two, if you're going to throw the ball downfield, it better be to Garrett freaking Wilson. And he targets Wilson 12 times. Wilson has 8 for 90. And I just weep for the season that Wilson would have had if Rodgers was healthy, or really any quality quarterback, if they had like Gardner Minshew or somebody, and Minshew made plenty of mistakes in that Colts game, but if they just had somebody who could imagine himself as like league average or close to league average a quarterback, man, Wilson would be a top five receiver, I think, and would have a chance at maybe being wide receiver one or two or three. I feel that great about him, but he's keeping his head above water. He's keeping himself in our lineups. Hall was bottled up by that Eagles front, as you expected. Man, the Eagles are so great. The Eagles are such a great team, period. That defense is ridiculous. He bails out with the touchdown. He was involved in the passing game, which we like to see. Breece Hall is another guy who they finally took the wraps off him last week. It was a Denver game. You take advantage of it. We knew he wasn't going to go crazy in this game, but Breece Hall is somebody I would start against anybody, no matter what his quarterback situation is, no matter what the weather is, no matter what the game total is. It doesn't matter. Breece Hall has graduated. You've been calling the Eagles, I think you've used this term, I know it's your phrase, you know, the playing with their food team. It's just another game where it just seems like they're messing around. They're messing around. Well, the Jets are still in it. Oh, the Eagles missed the field goal. Hurts turned the ball over. And all of a sudden you blink and the Jets were ahead. And the Jets defense, Matt, when you can get pass pressure without having to do exotic things, when you can just get pass pressure with your base guys. I know they do stunts and games up front, but they don't have to blitz to get in your face. And they also did a good job of containing Hurts as a runner, which kills so many other teams. Even with the injuries on the back end, that Jets defense stole this game. A day where Hall really didn't do anything. And all the Zach Wilson was just a caretaker, right? The Jets made so few explosive plays on offense. And it's funny, I said on Twitter right before we started, the Browns and Jets remind me, they're such similar teams. Nobody likes playing them. And if you're a Browns fan or a Jets fan, you're more comfortable when you're on defense.
Totally. I'm really not sure what to take away with the Eagles at this point in the season, because you're right, they have felt a little plain with their food-ish. In this game, they never established a consistent ground game, right? 10 carries for 18 yards for DeAndre Swift. He also loses a fumble in this one. Kenneth Gainwell had like one nice run kind of late in the game. Jalen Hurts had a couple of crazy scrambles, had his usual design run stuff, but the three interceptions, and that one especially was bad. And there were a few just misfires downfield. I think we can say to this point, Scott, that Jalen Hurts has not played his best football so far this year. I mean, and I don't know whether to blame it on the coaching change. You know, Brian Johnson was the quarterback coach last year. He and Hurts have a long time rapport with each other. They've known each other forever. So I'm not sure if I could blame it on that. I'm not sure if I can just blame it on simple regression or simple, you know, just running on the other side of variance, but it feels like he needs to play a little faster. It feels like he needs to get the ball out quicker. You know, Devonta Smith, 5 catches on 11 targets. And some of those was he should have made plays on the ball. But other times it's like Devonta's open and the ball gets there so like late that then it is into a contested situation. It feels like the one thing they're doing really well is like, okay, let's find AJ Brown the ball, who has another monster game with 131 yards here. But other than that, it's just the passing game feels so sporadic is kind of what it feels like right now.
Yeah, it doesn't feel crisp. Man, did Brown make some highlight film catches too? He's never covered. Even when he looks covered, I would just throw the ball up to that guy and hope he can make something good happen, which he so often does. With Smith, you have to take heart in the targets, you know, and Hurts only threw the ball to 4 guys. He threw the ball to the 3 primaries downfield, and Swift absorbed a bunch of targets and got 8 catches and a touchdown to bail out from a day where otherwise he didn't go anywhere. And then next week, man, the Eagles and the Dolphins. Oh, what a game that's going to be. Yeah, and maybe the Eagles were looking ahead to that game a little bit. I mean, this could have been a spot to come out a little bit flat. We get the Tua versus Hurts Bowl next week and all those great receivers, you know, frankly, Alabama alumni game for crying out loud. So that'll no be fun. Kidding. But I this is the easiest advice to give out. It's not my team, but I would still trade for Devonta Smith. You just get a ride. Wide receivers are variance position. There's only a handful of guys who you really expect that will be great every week. And then most people say, well, they have a chance. Well, they're going to get market share. Well, they're going to get some goal line opportunities, and you hope they cash in, knowing that they won't sometimes. Maybe Devonta Smith is just an eyelash more variable than the players who were drafted around him, but I don't think it's a major difference. Again, Hurts is somebody I trust. Sirianni is somebody I trust. This is an offense that's concentrated. I still think it's good to go out to the team that has Devonta Smith and see if they're interested in working a trade.
So this was the point I was going to make after you made the ageism point last. Ageism is just kind of a funny way of saying it, but like, you know, kind of the revenge of the old guys in certain areas this year. It's been a really bad year for like, this second receiver is going to close the gap or pass the top receiver on his team. If you thought of that about Jaylen Waddle, it couldn't be farther from the truth. Like Tyreek Hill's the number one receiver, and there's a huge gap between him and Jaylen Waddle. Like there's been a huge gap between AJ Brown and Devonta Smith. And I can't tell you how many times, like even when I tweet nice things about Devonta Smith, and I love Devonta Smith, you know, you'd get the response like he's gonna be better than AJ Brown this year. Look at the targets from week 2 of last year to the Super Bowl, like or week 2 of this season. It's so close. It's so the same. The gap has just been so wide. You know, our guy, Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin, right? Like that one has not gone well. Chase and Higgins. It's a huge gap. So I think that we get so caught up with like new things, right? And like the shiny new object. And it's not even that like AJ Brown or Tyreek Hill or certainly freaking Jamar Chase or, you know, even Terry McLaurin are like old guys, right? They're not like the Keenan Allen types that are balling into their 30s or whatever. But it's just like when these dudes are squarely in the prime of their career, like I'm not trying to have like, oh, this guy could be better than this guy. It's just that gap can still be so present when these players, like I said, those 4 guys that I just talked about are like elite players or right on the cusp of being elite players at the position. It's just so hard to like Wally Pip that type of guy.
Yeah, it felt like if you had the choice between the brand name and the generic, that you were better off taking the brand name. Some years it feels like a generic year. And generic's like the wrong word here. I mean, Jaylen Waddle's a great player. A healthy T. Higgins is a very good football player. Even in the case of the Chargers, I mean, Mike Williams getting hurt is a big reason why Allen goes down as the win and Williams goes down as the loss. And there's no way to predict that really before the season. But you make a great point, though. It seems the lineup, A.J. Brown and Smith, of course. If you just said, I'm just going to target whatever receiver the room gives me, I hope they gave you A.J. Brown, because you're probably pretty frustrated if you have Devonta Smith right now. And look, it's no sin to be the number 2 receiver on an offense like this. A.J. Brown is just more dynamic. He's more of a matchup problem. You can't make Devonta Smith taller. He's grown as much as he's going to grow. You know, A.J. Brown is just a receiver who comes around every 4 or 5 years. There aren't that many guys like him.
Exactly. There really aren't. Last thing on this game, we'll move on. Breece Hall, who we talked about. His schedule coming up after the bye is pretty sick. Our fantasy account tweeted this out. Giants, Chargers, Raiders, Bills, who obviously are dealing with a lot of injuries, and then the Dolphins in week 12. So Breece Hall could be shooting to the moon here pretty soon.
For sure.
All right, next game up, Lions 20, Bucks 6. This one, I thought this one might go down as more competitive, you know, especially because it's an outdoor game. It's Jared Goff. You know, he's away from home, all the home road splits. But the Lions looked like the better team from start to finish, despite the fact they lost a very important player in David Montgomery to a rib injury in this one.
Yeah, Jared Goff, you know, goes for over 300. And again, we talk about throwing the ball to the people we want. 15 targets for Sun God, 12 for 124 and a touchdown. And even though Sam Laporta only had four catches, you love the 11 targets. And look, America's all rooting for Jameson Williams. I don't know what to do with Jameson Williams going forward. He had that really nice touchdown catch where the ball was thrown a little bit offline and he had to turn his body around and contort himself and score. And that, you know, it's great to see the guy playing.
Yeah.
Great to see his suspension get reduced, which I felt like was the right outcome all along. But I have a lot of David Montgomery teams. This team does not have you can't just put anybody in the David Montgomery role and say, okay, swim. Offensive line's great. You know, we like the coordinator. We like the downfield weapons. You're going to get all these easy touches. Craig Reynolds came in, 10 carries, 15 yards. I'm not sure exactly when Gibbs is going to come back. And even when he does, he's not necessarily an inside the tackles pounder anyway. So hurry back, Montgomery. It's been the second injury this season. I think Montgomery is going to go down as a league winner if he stayed healthy. Mm-hmm. And it's just running back is a really hard position in the NFL. You know, the Lions, they did enough to win. The defense showed up. They made Baker's life kind of miserable. The Buccaneers are really hard to watch on offense. You know, Baker did what he did. He's competitive. He pushed the ball downfield. It's just I don't think guys were open. He certainly took a lot of hits in this game.
Yeah, oh my God.
But look, Jared Goff's getting the ball to the people we want. And I'm curious to see when Jameson Williams starts getting the type of route participation and target share that's playable. I don't think he has it yet.
No.
I haven't seen the data. I don't remember seeing him on the field all that much. He only was targeted three times. Josh Reynolds had 3 for 50 on his three targets. Josh Reynolds is a good player. He's not going to completely vanish. So I might need another – it might sound silly. I feel like Jameson Williams had a prove-it play. I still need a prove-it game from him before he's fantasy viable. But it's just fun to see the Lions in a – yeah, I live in Greater Detroit. It's been a really tough time for the sporting calendar in Detroit. You know, the Tigers, people are happy. They're almost 500. The Red Wings are rebuilding. The Pistons are constantly rebuilding. It's just nice to have something to be excited about. And Detroit is certainly excited about the Lions.
Yeah, and I love a team like the Lions that, okay, you take what has been kind of our central identity so far this season in David Montgomery and the power run game. All right, you take that off the board because of injuries. And you're right. Like, I keep coming back to the conversation I had with Austin Eckler about, like, what David Montgomery is doing and why it's really difficult and really, like, nuanced and especially in a nuanced way that, like, Craig Reynolds is not going to come in there and do that. Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, he had 80 yards, I think, in the game that Montgomery missed, but the success rate is so low, and that you can feel that, right? When Montgomery is out there, you can feel the difference in how they're moving the ball. You take that off the board and, like, okay, well, Jared Goff's going to drop back and pass 44 times. He's going to complete 68. Sun God, Amon Ross St. Brown's going to have a big game. I'm with you that, like, if Jameson Williams keeps progressing, that would be really huge to see. So I love that out of Detroit. Like, great teams are able to do that. You take away our first punch, we have a counter punch that may even be better than that first punch, right? Because I think St. Brown's a good enough player to take a game over. And then, you know, Reynolds is really solid. Laporta has been awesome. And if you get Jameson Williams out there, that's going to be really exciting as well. It felt like a week for the Bucs. Like, the Bucs highlight this because it felt like a whole week where the NFC South, like, just didn't show up, you know, especially in Atlanta, what we'll talk about later. But it just was kind of a reminder that, oh yeah, Baker Mayfield is he's not a perfect quarterback. He's been really good in this system, but completes 51% of his passes and has some misfires in this one. Maybe the receivers weren't open. It's hard to tell on the broadcast angle. And, you know, Mike Evans had one he definitely should have caught. And, you know, there were some misfires in the receiver position as well. But this was one of those games with Baker Mayfield where I was nervous we were going to get a lot more of that this year. And dude, they still can't run the ball at all. I knew they weren't going to be able to run the ball in this matchup, but 7 carries for 26 yards for Rashad White, 6 for 9 for Keyshawn Vaughn. Mm-hmm. It's just a slog back there. It's all on Baker's shoulders at this point.
So if they made me commissioner for the rest of the season, I would say that as of next year, the Chargers have to go back to San Diego. I would make every team have to take 2 weeks of buys in their schedule. I'd go back to 16 games and tuck one of those buys to a Thursday night game so you don't have to have those short turnarounds. And I would make Mike Evans a member of the Kansas City Chiefs effective immediately.
So I love that.
I've been given this divine power. I'm trying to do it for the good of the league, for the good of the game. Tampa Bay is now 3-2. it's important for the Buccaneers to see the big picture, right? The goal is not to win this lousy division again with an 8-9 record. The goal is to be a championship contender again in the near future. And I think that means trying to trade Mike Williams to a Chiefs team. There are other teams that need receivers, but the Chiefs, man, talk about playing with their food team. They never seem to look that great. I feel like they just throw Patrick Mahomes in the deep end, say swim every week, and he tries to bail it out. You know, Kelsey's playing really well. The defense has probably been better than expected.
They're boring, dude. They're boring. They're like boring to watch right now, the Chiefs.
You know, it's true. Look, they have the best player in the league. They have, you know, one of the best tight ends in the league. Kittle's a Hall of Famer. Kelsey's a Hall of Famer, and he's right there with any tight end you want to match him up against. He's dating the most famous woman on the planet, yeah. And they're boring, right? They're yeah, boring.
They're how is frustrating that? To watch.
Congratulations, Kansas City. That's a really tough needle to thread, but you've done it. So I'd like to see Mike Williams. And I know he said he wanted to stay in Tampa and everything, but I don't know how much longer he wants to play with Baker Mayfield. He got plenty of looks today. He never really was open. Yeah, it's one of those things where every time Baker threw the ball downfield, if you had Godwin, if you had Mike Evans, you knew it was probably going to one of those guys, and yet you probably felt like it wasn't going to get completed. Every Tampa Bay play felt stillborn before the snap.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Lions defense is good. Got to give them credit for that. That's another thing we should give the Lions credit for.
For sure.
All right, next game up here, Bengals 17, Seahawks 13. This game I thought had the potential to be more fantasy friendly than it was, but we didn't get like a vintage Joe Burrow performance, another low 5.3 yards per attempt. He gets picked off in this one. You know, the run game predictably goes nowhere. And Seattle, man, I kind of want to start in Seattle first, Scott, because it just feels like they're another team kind of like the Eagles, but like a Bud Light version of it, that there's just like something a little off with this pass game. Do you have any lean on what it is right now?
Yeah, the red zone execution was bad. Geno missed a couple of guys. He had DK Metcalf on one play for a walk-in touchdown. He just didn't see him. That happens every game.
Yeah.
We're just not privy to the shot a lot of times on the broadcast, and you have to watch the deeper tape, you know, to the level that like you do or some other people do with the All-22. You may not notice it, but I was surprised Seattle looked this flat after a bye week. At least they got the guys involved that we wanted. Walker had the early touchdown. He had 22 touches. That's good. 10 targets for Metcalf, 8 targets for Lockett, and all the ancillary guys only got, you know, 3, 4, 5 looks. Although at least we saw more of JSN too, which is, we're always looking for when would a rookie receiver off to a slow start, when would they maybe pick it up? A lot of times it's after the bye week. I hope JSN wasn't dropped in your league. If he was, he's certainly somebody I'd want to be having on my team. I could imagine him being a top 30, top 35 receiver at some point in the near future. It's still, he still needs to prove it game. This was a step forward. I don't think he's by any means startable yet. And Geno, there are a couple times he held the ball really, really long and took, I thought, were some bad sacks. And I'm a little scared that one of my preseason takes was that Geno Smith would play close to as well as he did last year, to the point that I would be pretty confident that Metcalf and Lockett would easily return their ADP and maybe even beat it. And I'm starting to think that I thought Geno would be better than what he's been like today. I thought today the loss, a lot of it goes on him. And I get it. You're trying to extend a play. You're trying to give your guy a chance to get open. But sometimes you just have to get rid of the ball. And I thought his pocket awareness was really poor in the second half. So football is a team game. Success has many parents. Failure has just as many parents. Just nobody wants to claim responsibility. But I have to start with the quarterback. I think Smith is not playing well right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you that I think he does need to share a good bit of the blame. You know, they get Charles Cross back in this one. They previously had not been playing with both of their starting offensive tackles, and they played well through that too. Like, I give them a lot of credit for being plucky right now on offense, but I thought that they'd be like a potential fireworks show on offense, and like for them to be plucky is fine. Like, they can win games that way. Kenneth Walker's running well. But man, it just, again, I expected more fireworks show than plucky so far for the Seahawks. And you know, their schedule doesn't exactly look great. They get the Cardinals next week, which that's fine, but then the Browns in week 8, the Ravens in week 9, they got to go to Baltimore, the Commanders in week 10, that's a nice spot, but then they get the Rams and this and the 49ers, and then the Cowboys and the 49ers again, and then the Eagles. And then they finished with the Titans and Pittsburgh. But yeah, it's not, there's some definite landmines there where I wonder if they'll even be able to get to Plucky.
And every fantasy player in this game, with I guess the exception of Kenneth Walker, either kind of scratched and crawled their way to what they were expected to do or came up short of it, right? I mean, a couple of guys had okay games. Nobody had a blow-up game. Mm-hmm. If you had to gamble on T. Higgins, thankfully, a lot of people were asking questions about T. Higgins. I did steer them away from Higgins, and I only say that thankfully. Thankfully, they had good depth, and I think they had the right instincts that they needed Higgins to maybe have a prove-it game, which he didn't have. Joe Mixon, in a game where the Bengals are ahead the majority of the day, gets 15 touches for 62 yards, no touchdown, and looked really indecisive and sluggish. It's one game.
Yeah.
You see a guy in the wrong day, you don't want to draw huge conclusions. I mean, for all I know, Joe Mixon could be galloping towards, you know, running back five status next week, but he didn't look good today. And I felt like the Bengals, once they got a lead, they're just like, okay, let's just not give this game away. Let's force Seattle to come down and beat us. Seattle couldn't do it. If you roster Jamar Chase, you know what you're getting with him, man. He just targeted and peppered with targets off the bus. And it feels like if you're going up against Chase and you see 6 for 80 and a touchdown, you're probably like, okay, good, exhale. Chase didn't crush me. Because Chase is going to have weeks where he wins games on his own. This was not one of those weeks. But I feel like both of these teams came out of this game not feeling all that great.
I think they feel really good, about their defenses. I agree from an offensive perspective. Like you mentioned, Joe Mixon didn't look good in this game. I don't think Joe Mixon's looked good all year. And I do think that if I'm willing to put, like, okay, some faith in the Seahawks going forward, it's that the Bengals do have a really good defense. And I kind of think the Seahawks defense is turning the corner too.
Right. And also Cincinnati goes into a week 7 bye, which, given the run out that's been for Burrow and then even Higgins getting hurt, they probably love it. Okay, we beat a team that's a good team, a game we easily could have lost, a game where the other team controlled the ball most of the way, had plenty of chances to score late. They didn't cash in. Let's get our win. Let's get healthy. Let's take a week off. Let's circle the wagons. I mean, it's a perfectly – you can't control when the bye week comes. It's on the schedule. I know teams have some agency because if you go to Europe, you have a choice of taking the bye when you come back or not, but – I think the Bengals are getting the rest right when they needed it.
Speaking of going to Europe, that leads to our next game here. Beautiful transition, Scott. Ravens 24, Titans 16. Titans don't come out of this one unscathed. Ryan Tannehill has an ankle injury. You know, we got to see Malik Willis in this game, if that floats your boat. You know, the Titans are the Titans, man. I don't really have too much to say on them. I want to focus on the Ravens in this one because they're another team that I expected to look a lot better than this on offense. You know, early in the game, they come out and they run the ball like a lot more than I would think, considering that the Titans have a run or like a pass funnel defense. They're one of the biggest pass funnels in the NFL. I didn't think that the running backs would finish with 24 carries, you know, Gus Edwards and Justice Hill, like replacement level players. And Lamar Jackson handled a season high 7 designed runs. He also scrambled a good bit. The more I think about it, man, and John Harbaugh was conservative too in this game on fourth downs and stuff. I just think they don't really trust their passing game right now because I just don't think they trust their players back there. And betting on old guys and injury optimism has not been good for this Ravens passing game. And you know, Scott, I'm disappointed. You know, Bateman and Beckham are like rotating at the X receiver position. I think they probably make combined one person's healthy lower body, maybe. Maybe like a half of a healthy person's lower body. So that's not surprising. I just think like I had high expectations for the Ravens offense and maybe they get there at some point, but right now they're another team that's kind of plucky. They're getting by, they're winning games. But like this dream that I had about the high ceiling of their passing game, I am personally letting that go until shown otherwise.
Well said. This was a 24-16 game. It felt like a 13-10 game. Right, it felt like a Steelers Ravens game, which we saw last week, and nobody wants to see more than two Steelers Ravens games a year because those things are always rock fights. This felt like a rock fight. There weren't a lot of splash plays, and you look at Baltimore. Right, I mean Jackson's startable every week, but I don't think anybody thinks he's like in the MVP conversation.
No,
Andrews has been good, but not great. Flowers has been good, but he's not. I wouldn't call him a league winner. He's just somebody who's meeting or slightly exceeding his ADP, but he's not like he's crushing it. What does Gus Edwards do? Gets you 3 yards of carry, maybe, and a tiny bit of goal line equity. Almost never catches a pass. He had one reception today, which is, you know, about all you can ever hope for him. Justice Hill is just a guy. The Ravens, man, this is not the Ravens team I thought their defense would be anywhere near as good as it has been. And I thought their offense would be really fun and exciting. Instead, I feel like we have a kind of boring offense and a defense that's better than I expected. On the Titans side, I know Derrick Henry broke off one long run. It felt like every other Titan play they ran was unsuccessful. Now, you don't want to be unfair about it. They lost their quarterback in this game. Malik Willis obviously isn't ready to play. They're a team that did choose to take the bye week after the London game, and man, do they need it. But DeAndre Hopkins is going to be a lot of variance in his game. You and I have already written off the young receivers in this offense that we liked before the season, that you just can't go near them. I wanted Chig to be a thing. It's just not going to happen. I wanted Burks to be a thing. I've given up on that. I'm even a little bit disappointed. I thought Spears would play more in a game that they trailed for pretty much 3 hours, and he didn't get enough work here. I was hoping he would maybe slide into a standalone role. Now maybe he's more of a contingency backup and not really somebody you could start. So you're basically hoping that Henry either breaks off that one long run or gets some goal line chances. We know he's never going to get that much work as a receiver. Hopkins, for the most part, has been a volume guy. He still doesn't have a touchdown on the season. Tannehill's not playing well. The other two young quarterbacks are not ready to play. Man, the NFL should have more bankable offenses than it does right now. And Tennessee, I don't know what it would take to make them a bankable offense, to make them an offense I want to dig in on. I feel like every week when the rewatches come up, I have to I have to con myself into rewatching the Titans game. I've already lived through it once. I don't want to live through it again.
Yeah, I'm with you. They're so far away, I think, from being a bankable offense. And I see more like how it could get worse from here, right? Tannehill is not even close to the same player that he used to be, but like I still think there's a good bit of an upgrade over like Malik Willis. And look, Willis looked more comfortable in this game, but not by much, than he did as a rookie. Like there were times where he was just immediately goes into scramble mode. He immediately goes into creation mode. And behind this offensive line, I kind of can't blame him. So I can see that one going the other direction. I'm pretty nervous about the Titans on that one. All right, next one up here. Commanders 24, Falcons 16. Hey, I will give Eric Bieniemy credit on this. You know, I had some harsh words for this offense going into this week, and they did the right thing, right? They revolved the pass game around Terry McLaurin, 11 targets for McLaurin, 6 for 81. Curtis Samuel was second on the team with 4. We didn't have like a bunch of De'Ami Brown and Byron Pringle and Jamison Crowder stuff going on here. You know, Sam Howell is Sam Howell. 3 touchdowns in this one. 2 of them go to running backs. The other goes to Curtis Samuel. So that's nice. That's at least a little bit of credit that I think we can give the Commanders there. They're not going to be like a great offense, I think, this year, but at least if McLaurin can get going, that would be nice.
I want to somehow scrub the internet of everything I said about Jahan Dotson before the season, because it's just not going to it's not going to happen.
Nah, but it's not going to happen. No.
Hey, yeah,
he's a good player, but it's not going to happen in the context of this offense. No. Like I think you can. It's just one of those things where maybe in a, like a different situation, but there's too many. Honestly, there's like a little bit of too many mouths to feed. Even when you scrape the ancillary dudes out of the mix, like the real ancillary dudes out of the mix, like Curtis Samuel's not going away. Like Logan Thomas doesn't have a big game in this one, but he's not going away. I don't know. They're an odd team right now. I think we can feel comfortable in what we thought about Jahan Dotson, the player, but just like from a fantasy perspective, it's not going to be like a breakout season.
Where are you at with Sam Howell right now?
I think he's shown like, I mean, comparing this to the guy on the other side of the field, like I think he's shown a ton more than Desmond Ridder, right? Who was another higher drafted than Sam Howell in that same draft class. Like, I think there's been ups and downs with both players, but I think the peaks have been higher with Sam Howell and the valleys have been higher with Sam Howell than they have with Desmond Ridder. There has still been definite like valleys in there, and there's been some really rocky moments, but I think he's shown enough that like I would want to see him the rest of the season and see if there's some. It's not going to be just a clear upward trajectory, but if that we're mostly like progressing upwards, even if there are some valleys in there.
I'm still worried that he takes so many hits.
He's
athletic. He's one of those guys. He's athletic, but he's not like absurdly athletic. I think sometimes he maybe believes in his playmaker abilities a little bit more than he should, but he's only made a handful of starts in the NFL. I want to be fair about it. And if this passing game, I'm at this point, if they could just get me McLaurin playable every week, I'll live with that. I've lowered my expectations. I was hoping both McLaurin and Dotson would have fancy playable seasons, and I've given up on that. Curtis Samuel has actually been nice to me as a desperation pickup for a couple of teams in deeper leagues, but there's no real ceiling there. I think we all agree there. Brian Robinson had a nice, kind of a broken play, but Brian Robinson had a nice touchdown run off a catch. At least he's not a zero in the passing game like he was last year. So Brian Robinson is probably a middle to lower end running back too. And that's something in these ugly running back streets. I'll say this for Desmond Ritter. I mean, he throws the three picks. He did not. He's one of these guys. He threw for 307 and a couple of touchdowns. He didn't play anywhere near as well as that may suggest. But
no, yeah.
You know, Drake London, big game for him. 12 targets, 9 for 125. The bottom line with London is that he's given you a bottom line you can live with in three or four games. So he's back. And if you can just forget that first game happened, and maybe the best thing is that the Falcons lost some games. They lost here today. And they can stop this. Oh, Drake London, you know, this whole Arthur Smith gobbledygook of Drake London doesn't care if he catches the ball. He doesn't care if he's targeted. That's, so that's fantasy football stuff. No, no. First of all, putting your best players in position to succeed is how the Atlanta Falcons will win football games. And just making Drake London an obsolete part of your offense is dumb. It's easy for Arthur Smith to create this boogeyman under the bed and everything, but come on. But anyway, London has a big game. Kyle Pitts, again, tight end's a very ugly position. Kyle Pitts can get six targets, get a touchdown, four catches. I think anybody would say yes to that. It wasn't a vintage Bijan Robinson game, but he still had 18 touches. We'll take it. The Falcons, they're always going to be flawed, right? And I think I'm at the point now where it's like you get a new watch, you get a new car, you buy a new house. You have something new, and it's shiny, and it's pristine. And then you first notice a scratch on it or a scuff on it. And it bothers you and you want to buff it out. You know, maybe you'll take it back and exchange it, whatever. And at some point you learn to appreciate what you have in spite of the flaws in the diamond, so to speak. I'm trying to look at the Falcons and appreciate them for what they are and not try to buff out the scars or the scratches, because I have a feeling those scratches are never going away.
I love that. I think that is a very zen thing to say, Scott. And I think that's a good way that people should look at it.
Trying, man. I'm trying. I'm trying to, you know, to see the beauty.
All right, well, let's see a little more ugly here as we get to the rest category here of the Week 6 Sunday recap. Starting with Raiders 21, Patriots 17. Jimmy Garoppolo leaves this game for a back injury. He was taken in an ambulance to a local hospital. The Raiders, according to Adam Schefter, wanted to err on the side of caution for this one. I mean, otherwise, this game is about what you'd expect. Jacoby Myers gets his revenge touchdown. Has there ever been anybody that deserved a revenge touchdown more than Jacoby Myers against the Patriots? I'm sure there's been others, but again, he gets it. Otherwise, yeah, it's this game went about as you'd expect, other than Ramondre Stevenson did find his way into the end zone.
Yeah, all the revenge, right? I mean, Brian Hoyer, revenge game. Jimmy Garoppolo, revenge game. Jacoby Myers. There are a bunch of teams that wish they had another guy. He'll never get traded to the Chiefs, but I bet the Chiefs are wondering now, maybe Jacoby Myers would have made sense. It's just a really smart play. It's ironic that the one dumb play of Jacoby Myers' career was that moment he lost his mind when the Patriots were playing the Raiders and he just threw the ball away for some reason. Nobody can understand it. He's one of the most cerebral, level-headed, sharp, intuitive players you'll ever want to see. And I'm just really happy to see him play well. Michael Mayer got going in this game too. I was thinking maybe he'd be a second half, first year tight end who might do something. I don't know if today is just a mirage, something that you bid on. It's whack-a-mole and then he does nothing next week. But it was nice to see him get involved. I always liked him at Notre Dame. A ton of volume for Josh Jacobs. It didn't go anywhere. The Patriots, man, they're just frustrating. I don't know what to say. Stevenson got a touchdown. He had five catches. That's good. He was dinged up in this game. It allowed Zeke to get a touchdown. Stevenson eventually came back. The pass game, I guess Kendrick Bourne caught 10 passes for 89 yards. I feel like I saw like three of them. I saw Devontae Parker drop a perfectly thrown Mac Jones pass that they absolutely had to have late in this game. But as a Patriots fan, I want them to lose now. I don't want them to win any more games. Purgatory is the worst place to be in the NFL. I want the Patriots to go 3-14. So I'm glad they lost this close game. For fantasy purposes, you can play Stevenson. I have a feeling that Bourne and Parker, whoever the receivers are healthy in a given week, are just going to be wrong answers. I don't trust Hunter Henry, although Mac Jones missed him in a play where he was wide open. Bottom line is the Patriots offense is garbage. They had a couple of guys who came through today, but I don't trust it as far as I can throw it.
If Brian Hoyer has to start for Jimmy Garoppolo next week, they go to Chicago to take on the Bears. So not the worst matchup in the world if you need to count on guys like obviously Jacoby Myers and Josh Jacobs and Devontae Adams if we get a Brian Hoyer start. Let's move to the next game here. Rams 26, Cardinals 9. Kyren Williams leaves this game with an ankle injury that he picked up late because he went off in this game. We talked about this in the preview show, Scott, that Sal Vitri, who does a ton of our like trade type content has been saying, like, this is a guy you definitely need to trade for if people are frustrated after a slow week five. Well, shout out, because that was a great call. Kyren Williams, 20 carries, 158 yards, and a touchdown. The Rams, dude, you know we love our concentrated offenses here. They are, I mean, they throw to literally five guys in this game. Cooper Kupp, 9 times. Tutu Atwell, once. Puka Nacua, 7 times. Didn't have a big game, but still. Tyler Higbee and Ronnie Rivers. Like, that's it.
A little surprised that Williams didn't have a target in this game. The Rams actually played pretty poorly on offense in the first half, and they only had like something like 20 or 21 snaps. So it's going to lead to a little bit of a misleading bottom line. But this is a good offense. It's not a great offense, but it's a good offense. As you said, the concentration, it makes Kupp, Nacua, Williams all easy plays for fantasy. You can squint and tell yourself a story about Tyler Higbee, although it didn't happen today. He did have one, I think he dropped one pass that he probably should have caught around the end zone. But I trust McVay. I trust Stafford. And I don't have Nacua anywhere, which kills me. I'm not really sure if I have Williams anywhere. I wish I had seen that coming, and I didn't see it coming. But you know, Sal's point was spot on. I mean, Williams is getting such a ridiculous snap share and opportunity share that his value goes past even whatever you think his raw skill is. And he actually had a big blow-up game today. But there'll be times where Williams might have 25 touches. He doesn't do a lot with them. And people are like, oh, Kyren Williams isn't really that good. It doesn't matter. If he's on the field this much, he's an elite. He's a running back one. He's not a running back two. He's a running back one.
Totally agree. This has been a great year, and the Rams sort of epitomized this of like, hey, when you see early signal, don't be afraid to be aggressive on the waiver wire with both Williams and Nacua. I don't know when it's going to happen, but at some point Stafford is playing at such a high level and they're throwing the ball at a pretty high clip. I mean, only 24 times in this game to 20 runs for Kyren Williams, 4 for Zach Evans, 3 for Ronnie Rivers. But it was a game they kind of controlled late. At some point, he's going to have like a 3-touchdown game. I don't know when it happens. I thought this could have been one of those weeks. They get the Steelers next week, who are coming off a bye, but do have a beatable secondary. At some point, Stafford's going to have like a 3-touchdown game. I just don't know when it's going to happen. Thought this would be it. Otherwise, on the other side of the field, you know, if you bet big on any of these Cardinals running backs, you didn't come out of here looking that good. Josh Dobbs leads the team in rushing, 7 carries for 47 yards. 10 for 40 for Keonta Ingram, 8 for 36 for Damian Williams, Amari DiMercato, 2 for 11. They were all a little bit involved in the pass game as well. So I don't think someone is like stepping up to be a startable player in the absence of James Conner.
I was shocked DiMercato played this little. I didn't think that they viewed Ingram and Williams as clearly better than him, but the usage suggests that. Also disappointed that Marquise Brown, Hollywood, gets 11 targets and all he gets out of that is 4 for 34. Because
he had one where he couldn't get the ball in bounds. You know, it was like a deep sideline shot. It was just a little bit off from Josh Dobbs, but he's played well this year.
I have a feeling he's going to have a ton of air yards in this game, and he's probably going to be on a lot of buy low lists. But yeah, the Cardinals, I thought they played a lot better than a team that only scored 9 points. I felt like they were always threatening to score, but they had trouble finishing off their drives. We saw Trey McBride get involved. Wilson had a decent game yardage-wise. Zach Ertz didn't do much with 5 targets. Bottom line is I still think Brown is a really good fantasy piece. And Dobbs, you know, like a DFS punt or a super flex scrounge up play because he runs a lot. And don't we see the same thing about the Cardinals every week, right? They're not a good team, but they're a scrappy team. They play hard. And at least 2 or 3 people out of this offense seem to be fantasy viable week in, week out. I start with Hollywood Brown there, but I thought this game was more competitive than the final score indicated.
Next game up here, Dolphins 42, Panthers 21. This is a great game because we don't care about a ton of people in fantasy in this game, but they all basically got home. Tua throws 3 touchdown passes. Raheem Mostert leads the NFL with 11 total touchdowns right now. Just insane stuff for the old man there. He gets home with 3 touchdowns in this game. Tyreek Hill is a big game. Jaylen Waddle finds the end zone. Adam Thielen, you know, quote, goes off again. He has a big stat line. And Chuba Hubbard, if you had to play him, he found the end zone as well.
This was a perfect fantasy game, right? The stars did star things, right? Mostert was ranked very highly by the entire industry. It was like a DFS slam dunk, like a free square, 3 touchdowns. Tyreek Hill had a huge game. Jaylen Waddle wasn't a monster, but he had 7 catches and a touchdown. You can never feel bad about that. If you needed to play they're going to be so far ahead that Salvin Ahmed will get carries and maybe get a touchdown. Well, that came in.
Yeah.
And on the Carolina side, you were only hitching your wagon to 2 things. Adam Thielen gets all the targets, check. Chuba Hubbard is going to get all the carries or just about all the carries. Check. This is a perfect fantasy game, man. In a day where upsets and quarterbacks were getting hurt left and right and star skill players were getting hurt left and right, every plausible thing that you bet on with Miami and Carolina came in. And it's just not easy for that to happen. And Miami is just they're the right answer for fantasy right now. And start with Mostert. His ADP, summer ADP in Yahoo, I think I looked it up, was like 118 or something like that. Right now, Nobody knows where it's going to end. This guy's been hurt a bunch of times in his career. According to Pro Football Reference, he's been released 7 different times. And I'm not sure if they have every one of those. There could be more releases that aren't tracked on that because that's not a perfect – it's not always a comprehensive list of a player's transaction history. This guy's – I feel like this guy's been interviewed or worked out in just about every city in the NFL. He's a great story. But he's 31 years old. He's not the biggest guy physically. They obviously have another really talented player in Achan coming back at some point. Jeff Wilson was really close this week, didn't get scratched until game day. Eventually, he's going to play. I wrote about Mostert in my piece Sunday, and I think he's probably a forced hold if you have him, because if you try to shop him and trade, the other person's going to act like you're trying to pull something over on them, like you're tiptoeing into their house at midnight. Oh, yeah, I'm just here to make a sandwich. You need somebody to give you a lot to trade him. And yet the other person is going to be like, well, he's a 31-year-old journeyman. He always gets hurt. They have other players in that backfield, one who might be better than Mostert anyway. So I think you just ride it as long as you can. I have Mostert in a few leagues. And if I don't get I'm not going to trade him just to trade him. If I don't like the return, I'm not trading him. And I think he's going to be hard for somebody who doesn't roster Mostert to believe in. Again, I'll come back to what I said originally. I think he's a forced hold.
I totally agree with you, and I have Mostert in a few spots as well. And I'm just riding it until the wheels fall off, man.
And they will. And
look, his role.
They will, but I'm riding it.
I mean, I always say that about Raheem Mostert. He's here for a good time. He's not here for a long time, right? Like, I mean, that's the reality of the player. But this good time has been better than anybody could have possibly imagined. It's just unfair for this offense that can do what it does in the passing game. And he's been a mismatch in the passing game at times in the red zone too. He's been somebody they've used well, but the fact they can just hand it to him and he gets 6.8 yards per carry in this game it's incredible.
All hail Mike McDaniel. Not only does he scheme beautiful plays, but he gets the ball he lets his best players be his best players. And he's got one of the tightest, most concentrated usage trees in the league. And that's what we want, man. We're not here for the Durham Smythe experience, right? We're here for the main guys to get the ball, and that's what happens in Miami.
Next game up, another kind of concentrated usage tree, Jags 37, Colts 20. The Jags threw to 6 players in this game. And look, they controlled this one. Like, if you didn't pay attention to this game, don't feel too bad, because I had it in the multi-box, and I was like, all right, this is not going too well, right, for the Colts. Any Gardner Minshew revenge didn't go too well. 3 interceptions in this one. Like I said, 6 players caught passes for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, Calvin really doesn't have the blow-up game, but, like, again, they held this game kind of in control, did the Jacksonville Jaguars, because Minshew kept giving them the ball back. I don't know that we have to say too much about the Jags. We kind of know who the Jags are at this point. Travis Etienne turns in another big fantasy day. But Scott, a temperature check on Gardner Minshew as like the fill-in for Anthony Richardson, because I think a lot of people would be like, oh, it's fine. No big deal. Like, you know, and I felt like he's one of the best backups in the NFL, but a little bit of a concerning performance, maybe more so for the Colts in real life than I guess in fantasy, since Michael Pittman still got home and Josh Downs scored a touchdown. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. How you feel about the Gardner Minshew experience after this one?
Well, I think he had a much better fantasy day than he did a real-life game, right? I mean, he goes over 300 yards, and as you said, Pittman targeted off the bus, gets over 100 yards, Downs had a touchdown. Both of the running backs were actively involved in the passing game. Between Moss and Taylor, they caught 11 passes, which enabled them to both have value in a day where they couldn't run for anything. Moss did get a short touchdown, but the bottom line, a lot of people probably had a Taylor or Moss question, and either guy they played, at least you get something out of it. I mean, I know that you're happy for 65 total yards for Taylor, but the 5 catches buffer some of that out in a PPR. So that's about what you expected, right? That workload would probably be close to even today, and Taylor's eventually just going to move further ahead of Moss and further ahead of Moss. Minshew, as much as I would love to imagine, he's Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's who he is, right? He's a guy who he's fun. He's exciting. You root for him. And on the right day, on the right couple of days, the right month, he can catch lightning in a bottle. He's not a long-term solution. He's an unbelievably good backup. And it sounds like he might be the Colts starter for the rest of the season. And that's not necessarily bad news for Pittman or Downs or the two running backs. This can be a professional offense. The problem is Minshew's going to make enough negative plays that it probably means the Colts are going to win 6 or 7 games. But I don't think it's going to hurt for fantasy. And also, we knew Richardson was going to take a lot of those scores off the table for himself because his running component is a big part of why they drafted him and why he's such an exciting prospect. Minshew will run some. A lot of it's kind of out of desperation at times. But I think he could be a decent facilitator for fantasy purposes. He's just unfortunately probably going to make enough mistakes that's going to hold the Colts back as a team.
Scott, do you know who the Colts play next week?
They don't play Jacksonville again?
They do not. They've played Jacksonville twice now, so that's off the board. They play the Browns. That could be.
No.
Hey, you know what? Actually, I take it back. I'm about to sit here and say, like, oh, that'll be brutal for old Gardner Minshew. But honestly, that'll probably be like, he'll throw 3 touchdowns against the Browns 1 week after they bottle up the 49ers and give them their first loss because that's just like classic NFL BS.
If everybody's healthy, you think who has the best defense in the NFL?
Browns. I think Browns like kind of comfortably right now.
Although, man, yeah, everybody healthy in the Jets is a pretty scary proposition. And how the NFL let the Eagles get Carter in the middle of the first round. I mean, I know there were off the field issues at play there, but the Eagles defense still scares the pants off me, too.
Hey, one really good defense in the NFL is the New Orleans Saints. Wasn't good enough for them to beat the Houston Texans, who win 20-17 in this one. But we talked about on the preview show, Scott, CJ Stroud, his first interception. He did throw it to the Saints in this one. But, you know, otherwise, like, he still has a pretty solid performance in this one. Does enough to win the game. Gets him a red zone touchdown to Dalton Schultz. Got another one to Robert Woods there. CJ Stroud's the man. The fact they come away with a win in a tough spot here against the Saints, like a tough matchup, is pretty impressive, I think, for CJ Stroud, even though he threw his first interception.
Yeah, for the most part, it's green lights here. I thought Dalton Schultz was the kind of an obvious DFS play and somebody a lot of people promoted this week. I slipped him into the sleeper article because he wasn't over 50% roster, which I thought was a mistake. And Stroud, as we've said all year, I mean, he's just given the Panthers a nightmare because it looks like he was the best player in the draft. When is it going to get better for Damian Pierce? I know the offensive line started to heal up, but he's out-touched today by even touches with Devin Singletary. I mean, Dave, it's supposed to be 70-30 Pierce, and it hasn't been. You know, if you drafted Nico Collins, you're happy. If you have to play Robert Woods during the slim weeks, I know all he did today was catch the touchdown, but whatever. I mean, it's a passing game you can feel pretty good about. Everybody's going to meet or outkick their ADP, and CJ Stroud is such an exciting player. This is an offense and a team with the arrow pointing upward. I think they got the head coach right in D'Amico Ryans. But when is it going to be a happy song for Damian Pierce?
Great question. I saw a tweet from Jonathan Alexander, who writes for the Houston Chronicle. Just the title was, "No, Damian Pierce has not been benched." And this was this morning, 9:36 a.m. On Saturday morning, actually, excuse me, October 14th. And I was like, oh, man, like benched. I mean, I know he hasn't produced well, but I didn't think it was all his fault. So there was actually some of the talk in there about, you know, he's kind of struggled with patience and stuff like that. Some more detailed, nuanced type stuff. They get the bye this week, and then they come back and they play the Panthers in week 8. So that could certainly be the get right spot for Damian Pierce. I think if it's not then, and like the line is healthier, they have a bye week. Pierce has some time to kind of, again, fully immerse himself in the offense. If it doesn't happen against the damn Panthers, then I don't think it's going to happen.
Fair. Yeah, that you would think after the bye with a better offensive line and then Carolina, just about the perfect matchup, that should happen then. On the other side, I know Derek Carr went over 300 yards, and I'm glad we're both big Chris Olave guys. You know, 7 for 96 on 10 targets, that's fine. I feel like if Chris Olave was playing with a good quarterback, he'd be smashing the NFL right now. I feel like he's just one of those guys who's always open, and Carr doesn't see it, or he throws a ball late. And so like a 20-yard gain could have been a touchdown. Plays like that happen all the time. It's still driving me nuts, even on a day when he's productive.
You want to know why it's driving you nuts, Scott? And it's the same reason it's driving me nuts. You know, normally I'm like, okay, the game is 4 quarters. You got 4 quarters to make it happen. Okay, don't freak out about this. But it feels like every week, and the splits back this up, first half, second half, feels like every week they take forever. And they kind of did this last year, too. take forever to get to like the Chris Olave, like, let's just throw the ball to this guy and like, let's have him bail us out late because he's really, really good. And like you said, he's always open, but it feels like in the first quarter, there's just never enough Olave. And then they barely get to it in the second quarter. It's like, all right, in the second half, then that's where all the Chris Olave yards come.
I also feel every week, maybe I'm imagining this, there's a couple of those plays where a play is run and then they go back to the huddle and they show a highlight of Chris Olave on the other side of the field where the play wasn't run with his hand up with nobody around him.
Yeah, totally. 100%. I mean, this guy is one of the best route runners in the NFL. He is consistently always open. And they traded up to, what, the 11th overall pick to get this guy? Like, why don't you just, again, I know I'm complaining about a player that had 10 targets and by and large is going to finish the year having been very productive, but he's probably going to finish the year unless, like, if current pace holds up with like 5 touchdowns, and that's going to drive me crazy because it's like, why don't you just build the whole offense out of this guy? He's good enough. You have some solid supporting players. Like Michael Thomas catches 4 to 5 balls every week. Rashid Shaheed makes big plays. Like, that's fine, but I feel like these guys in supporting actor roles, it would be so much better if you just built the whole thing out of Chris Olave.
I also got to say about the Saints, when we think about how exciting of a player Alvin Kamara has been, whoever thought that later in his career he'd just be a boring volume guy? That's what he is right now. He's a guy getting a ton of volume and doing so little with it. But
Alvin, David Montgomery,
right,
Kamara.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, with maybe a little bit more receiving juice. You know, of course, we know Carr loves to check down. So today, you know, Kamara, no explosive plays that I saw, but he touched the ball 26 times. He got over 100 total yards. That's fantasy playable. I feel like he could never be a running back one with his current skill level, but I feel like the usage he's getting will never get him that low in my rankings either, to the point that everybody who rosters him is going to start him. He will never win your game for you. He'll never lose your game for you. He'll contribute. The rest of your roster will determine what happens. It's just strange to be here with a player who used to be as electric as anybody, who could be on magazine covers, who could be, when they're promoting the game the next week, he could be the player they featured. You know, I don't feel that way about him anymore.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said. All right, last game up here, Minnesota Vikings 19, Bears 13. First of all, for the Bears, Justin Fields' right hand injury, according to Jake Lazor, Fields dislocated his thumb today, popped it back in. He tried to play, but was unable to grip the ball. X-rays are negative. We're going to need an MRI on Monday to figure out full severity of the damage. So that kind of leads me to my point here. Vikings win this game. Who cares? Okay, because I still come out of this game feeling as worried about the Vikings offense as I possibly could be without Justin Jefferson. The biggest play the Vikings make all day is the fumble, sack fumble return on Tyson Bennett, the backup quarterback for Justin Fields. You know, and by the way, I'm not the only person who was concerned with the Vikings offensive performance. Kevin O'Connell, the head coach, said after the game, quote, "It was kind of a revolving door of missed assignments from some of our more reliable players. Our guys are excited to get the win, but our offense will be hungry to go back to work and make sure we rectify some of those things." Because honestly, the way Kirk was throwing today, I feel like it could have been a much, much bigger day. I made the point about the Saints, like they have supporting actors. And I think now they're asking all of their supporting actors, even if they've used a lot of resources to get some of these supporting actors in Minnesota, they're asking their supporting actors, Scott, to be leading men. And like, it just doesn't work like that. You can't take a player like Justin Jefferson out of here and ask everybody to come up a peg.
If I ask you, okay, what tight end is going to have 8 targets, 6 catches for 50 yards? You'd immediately say TJ Hawkinson next. 100%. What running back is going to have 18 carries for 44 yards and no touchdown, 4 for 28 and 0? You'd be like, yeah, it sounds like Alexanderson Madison's music. I'm frustrated because I picked the Bears +3 in this game, and I feel like the Vikings did nothing real. Not that the Bears did much either, but this is another game that felt like a 10-7 game. And the big play, as you mentioned, was that scoop and score, which was the backup quarterback playing, you know, running around with his chicken head cut off and all that stuff. And then I thought a really bad level of compete from the Bears after the fumble. Maybe the guys thought the play was over. But, I mean, when you see that play where the ball is recovered and the guy who recovers it, you'd never think it goes for a touchdown. But, of course, it did. Just frustration all around, man. I mean, we were hoping that somebody in the Chicago backfield would take the opportunity and run with it. I mean, you know, Foreman had 15 carries. He barely averaged 3 yards a carry. After a bunch of really big games, DJ Moore was held kind of in check. He made a couple of late catches. He also made an awesome play on one of the turnovers where he ran downfield and stripped the ball away from the Viking player, just the type of player that DJ Moore is. But the Vikings are going nowhere. The Bears are going nowhere. This is a game both teams should have lost. And Minnesota, unfortunately, as much as we want to say, well, okay, Jefferson's out. Let's talk ourselves into KJ Osborne. Let's talk ourselves into Jordan Addison. I know Addison had a touchdown. You know, let's play TJ Hawkinson props or play him in DFS. The buoyancy of the offense is out the window when Justin Jefferson is on the field. There's no replacement for guys like that. You can't, no matter who's on your roster. And these are good players, right? Addison was a first round pick. Hawkinson was a first round pick. You know, Kirk Cousins is an above average quarterback, but you take Jefferson out of the offense, and it's just, you know, it's like taking Mick Jagger out of the Rolling Stones. You don't have any more Rolling Stones.
100%. And I don't think that's necessarily this was a layup matchup for them against the Bears. I don't think it's necessarily going to get better as they go forward in the schedule. You know, they get the 49ers next week.
Oh, God.
Through the Minnesota Vikings. Like, that's not going to be great. You know, the Packers, Falcons, Saints. They get the Broncos in week 11. Maybe Justin Jefferson is back by then. I kind of buy that he's going to come back at some point this season. I don't know that he's just going to come back for nothing. But, you know, Schefter also didn't say that for nothing.
But I hope so. They have really good second half schedule. There's a ton of green on it. And, of course, with their home games being indoors, they're all weather insulated. They should be a fantasy carnival. But I can't imagine any Viking you played today made you happy. You bailed out because Addison scored the touchdown. But everybody else you played probably did less. Maybe Hawkinson kind of gave you the Hawkinson game you expected, but everybody else was a disappointment against the Bears defense that hasn't stopped anybody.
Yeah, very true. All right, Scott, it's going to do it. Hell of a show, buddy.
It's fun.
All right, for all of you out there, be sure to tune in on Tuesday where Andy and I go through the post week 6 regular season version of the People's Panic Meter. Again, send in your, what's panicking you? Try to do it by 3 p.m. Eastern time, okay? fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Also, you can just find the tweet that I put out at @MattHarmon_BYB. You can find the solicitation for what's panicking you, and we'll also talk top waiver wire pickups. So you got all that to look forward to tomorrow. And I know there's probably some people out there panicking, even if we are, you know, look, like we're close to coping, okay? And somebody else will be in the coping corner this week after Ramondre Stevenson. He scores a touchdown after being the first introduction to the coping corner, so maybe the coping corner is on canceled notice, but we'll see about that. Anyways, until then, we're out.